Welcome into Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf here. I am Lone Wolf today, but not really. I have a guest, just no Gavin. I did bring in Ryan Finkelstein of Locked On Mets and Metsmerized, and continuing our little off-season, endless off-season series that we've been doing here of talking to the other New York sports hosts. I talked to Ryan, who's the host of Locked On Mets, about the other orange and blue team in the city. And one that has had just as much misfortune as the Knicks, albeit in different ways. But we talk about, most importantly, the comparison between Steve Cohen and James Dolan, which I think is going to be something that's going to come up more over the years, along with the comparison between Dolan and the Wilpons in the race for who is the worst owner in New York sports. So we will get into that. And more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts without a five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Up and puck left. Now fires a three.
And he's good. And he's fouled.
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down. This is all about back up off the glass. It's good. RJ Barrett.
Becomes infectious. All right. Welcome into Locked On Knicks. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your next order. And as I said in the intro, I am solo today, but I have a really nice guest to talk with. I have Ryan Finkelstein. He's the host of Locked On Mets and a writer for Metsmerized, one of my favorite Mets sites personally. Ryan, how you doing? And how's the Mets season treating you? It's so peculiar because, well, the Knicks aren't playing, but every major sport is playing right now. So it's like everybody that's a fan of anything has something to watch right now.
Well, I'm doing good. And I would say that the Mets season ended this weekend when they lost to the Braves. Now they're essentially out of it. So I'm less focused on the Mets games as if they have a chance to make this expanded playoffs and looking towards the future with Steve Cohen.
Yeah, you and me both. I mean, I think I've done a good enough job advertising it on the show, especially recently when we've been doing these crossover episodes. But I have the unholy trinity of New York sports teams that I'm a fan of, which is the Knicks, obviously, the Jets, which we had a little crossover last week, and the Mets, which is my final team out of my, you know, troika of self-hate, I guess you would call it. But yeah, it's the Mets season is basically over. I find it to be kind of disappointing, although a little predictable considering all the injuries that they suffered this year. I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, I guess I'll start the discussion before we get into Cohen, which I'm very excited to get into. You know, the Mets, I think, were a little snake bitten this year, kind of. Like, I went into the season thinking, okay, I mean, this is a team that the Mets have a tradition of always starting hot and then royally cooling off and then finishing the season hot. And this year I was like, well, shortened season, you know, not a lot of time for them to cool off. So maybe they'll just hit the ground running and be able to actually make some noise this year. But as we saw between opt-outs and, you know, of Cespedes and Stroman, and then injuries to Syndergaard all the way back in the original spring training, and a number of other guys, it just kind of all fell apart, particularly with starting pitching. But, like, what were your expectations going into the season before anything happened the way that it ultimately did?
Yeah, well, I mean, when we were, you know, pre-COVID, I was going through and ranking, you know, top starting pitching in the NL East and top bullpen. And, you know, the Mets fared really well in all those categories. Then the Syndergaard injury was big, and then you get into the season and Stroman gets hurt, then opts out. And that really has been the season for the Mets. Their pitching was just terrible. Steven Matz, I don't know what happened to him. He was awful this year. And ultimately, their signings that they made with Rick Porcello and Michael Wacha did not work out, which I predicted dating back to last season, where I was advocating for them to sign Zach Wheeler to a contract extension. So if you look at the Mets and their individual performances, they've gotten unbelievable years out of their position players, but the pitching has been so atrocious that they've, you know, basically lost, I'd say, 90% of their series this year. I think they only won two series all year. So that's basically been the story for the Mets this year. And I kind of think it is a fitting end to what the Wilpon era has been in New York.
Yeah, it's really, there's sort of some parallels you can make between the Mets starting pitching staff of yesteryear and like maybe the Porzingis situation with the Knicks. I've been trying to like go into these crossover episodes with sort of an apt comparison. And we're going to get into like the Wilpons versus Dolan thing in a minute, which I think is the most poignant one to look at. But, you know, there's something to be said for like Porzingis was on the Knicks. Everybody looked at him as like, he's going to be the future. And then between a combination of not wanting to sign him because of injury concerns, you know, and just some dissent with the organization and stuff like that, it just didn't end up working out. And like what was supposed to be the big thing for the Knicks, you know, just ended up out the door. And luckily they got some compensation for him, and we'll see how that all works out. But like for a lot of Knicks fans, that was deeply disappointing. And I think there's a kind of a comparison to be made there with like the old SI cover from a few years ago where it was DeGrom, Harvey, Matz, Syndergaard, Cologne, and Wheeler, I think, was on that one as well. And then you also had Nice in there for a minute, which like Nice looked like he might have something going. And, you know, you just looked, and even just whatever that was, like 5 years ago, you looked at the Mets and were like, man, like this team might really have something, you know, like they might have a pitching staff that could be the best in baseball for like half a decade or longer. And it was almost like a Sports Illustrated curse. Like ever since then, it's basically been like, okay, Harvey, you know, gets hurt and then falls out of favor with the organization and just never kind of is the same again and gets DFA'd. And like, it was really sad, anticlimactic ending to his career with the Mets. And then like Syndergaard's been constantly hurt. Matz has been constantly hurt and underperformed. And DeGrom obviously has turned into what he's turned into, but you know, baseball is not a one player sport where you can just count on one stud to carry the whole team. So it's sort of been all for nothing, unfortunately, that DeGrom has turned into this like yearly Cy Young winner that he has. But yeah, I don't know. Like, what are your feelings just on how things have sort of unraveled the last few years for the Mets?
Well, I actually think that there's even a more recent comparison you can draw between the Porzingis trade and what the Mets have done. If you go back to last trade deadline with Marcus Stroman, they make this deal where they trade a couple prospects. Anthony Kay is actually factoring into the Blue Jays pitching staff right now, and a guy who's now their top four pitching prospect, Simeon Woods Richardson, went to Toronto. The Mets get Stroman back, and the idea was he was supposed to be the pitcher that replaced Zach Wheeler and took a team that was on the verge to maybe contend for a World Series in 2020. Stroman makes 9 starts with the Mets, opts out of this season, is now a free agent, and the Mets lose those prospects for nothing. You go to Porzingis with the Knicks, and the idea is they trade Porzingis and clear space for Durant and Kyrie, and they're going to win the lottery and get Zion, and they're left with RJ Barrett. So I think, you know, there was lofty expectations in both of those trades, you know, recently, and it just did not pan out for either franchise.
Just a quick reminder, today's show is brought to you by Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. Or in my case, I just watched the Knicks get pulverized. And it was not fun. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to roman.com/lockedonNBA today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's getroman.com/lockedonNBA. Getroman.com/lockedonNBA. It's kind of funny too that I guess previously when Stroman opted out, my thought was like, damn, well, that might be it. Now, I mean, maybe now's the time to broach the subject that I've been like patiently waiting for 5 or so minutes to get into. But, you know, now you got Steve Cohen, who can potentially re-sign everybody and yeah. Money should never be an issue for the Mets again. So, you know, whereas when Stroman first left, which, you know, the circumstance behind that, I don't blame him for opting out for COVID concerns. It was kind of sketchy that he waited until like exactly the time that it took for him to be able to enter like unrestricted free agency to do that. But it is what it is, I guess. But, you know, whereas at that point I was thinking, oh, well, that's probably the last we'll ever see him in a Mets uniform. And there goes some, you know, some prospects. And there was the other deal too, that you didn't mention, that was a big Band-Aid sort of move last year as well, where Brody Van Wagenen, for those not familiar, another former CAA general manager, another comparison to the Knicks. Hopefully Leon Rose is a little better, but he traded Jared Kelenic to Seattle for Robinson Cano and Victor Diaz. And Diaz has been terrible after being like an all-star closer with Seattle, and Cano predictably has looked kind of old and washed up and probably quite overpaid. Meanwhile, you know, the guy they traded is lighting it up for Seattle. So,
yeah, well, that trade's interesting because, you know, if the Mets this year, those two players, Diaz and Cano, have actually been pretty decent. If they were that good last year, the Mets probably make the playoffs, and that trade isn't looked on as poorly as it is now. But of course, Kelenic, the guy you mentioned, I mean, people think he's going to be the next Mike Trout. So that was the huge loss in that trade. And even the other prospect that went to Seattle is in their starting rotation right now, and it's pitching pretty well. So yeah, that was a bad one. I think the Stroman one might end up being worse, only because I think the Mets might actually get production out of the guys that you know that they acquired. Whereas if the Mets don't sign Stroman, they got 9 starts in a season where they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah, that was Dunn as well. Justin Dunn, they traded as well in that trade, and that was not fantastic. But whatever. Enough with the sad.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah,
so easy to get caught up in it always with every team in New York basically lately, right down to the Yankees even, which used to be sort of the team that you held on high, is like, well, New York sports suck, but at least the Yankees are always good. No, not so much anymore. Or at least it's not a guarantee. At any rate, just a couple weeks ago, we got official confirmation, or I guess about a week ago exactly, we got official confirmation that Steve Cohen is buying the Mets for $2.4 billion. Which I believe is the richest price that a team has ever fetched in the MLB, or very close to it, and beat out the J-Rod bid, J-Lo and A-Rod, which got a lot of public support, which I think was sort of a PR thing because they were sort of using the media to trash this Cohen bid. And even some MLB owners were allegedly kind of on the fence about letting Cohen in because he is so rich and so big of a Mets fan that they're worried that he's going to affect the entire competitive balance of the league by spending so much money in a league that traditionally I feel like has to in some way sort of collude to keep their player salaries down as much as possible, because some of the times that guys have had to settle for the deals that they've settled for have seemed a little suspect to me. But before we get into like the Dolan and Cohen and Wilpon comparisons, what's kind of your initial thoughts on Cohen and how it, you know, is going to affect the Mets going forward?
Well, I'm pretty sure I have this right. I think you could take the top 3 or 4 owners in baseball and combine their net worths, and they would still not be as rich as Steve Cohen. So when you're a Mets fan, after years of them operating kind of like a small market team, obviously that makes your eyes light up. And you think there's going to be some big changes with the Mets. I don't know if he's really just going to drop money all over the place and sign Trevor Bauer, Marcus Stroman, JT Realmuto, and just go crazy. But what I do think he's going to do is it sounds like he wants to invest money in the baseball operations and getting more analytical people in there and really trying to win within the margins, kind of like you've seen the Dodgers do. While they have, you know, spent money in free agency and done some things, they've really invested in their farm system, and that has made them a perennial contender. So you look at what the Dodgers were before they changed their ownership, and you've seen what they've become. And while they haven't won a World Series, I think they've won the division for about a decade now, or at least, I mean, like almost every single year. So I think that's what Mets fans are looking forward to, is that type of sustained success.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, I think that's something that, Mets and Knicks fans share in common, is that it's been so long since you could have sustained success. Like, and that's like the key word, because both teams, I think, had sort of a flash in the pan that made you go, oh man, things are looking up. And then they didn't. You know, with the Mets, it was the 2015 World Series appearance, which then was followed up the next year by a wild card appearance that they lost, and then they haven't been back since. And, you know, then the Knicks, it was the 12-13 season with Carmelo and Tyson Chandler and Raymond Felton and all the old vets, J.R. Smith. And, you know, that they made it to the second round of the playoffs, which for the Knicks may as well have been, you know, the finals, by the amount that the fans were excited. But then since then, you know, they came up just short the next year, and then it's been kind of a downward spiral since then. So I think that's sort of what both fan bases are looking for at this point, or at least I could say that's what I'm looking for from the standpoint of a fan of both teams. Just a reminder, today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. And I tell you what, the improved Built Bar is somehow even deliciouser. Built Bar now comes with 6 new flavors. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's actually now 7 new flavors. They just added a pumpkin chocolate chip flavor, which sounds phenomenal. To go with 6 other new flavors, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. That's along with 12 flavors that you already loved, like coconut almond, peanut butter, mint brownie, orange, and peanut butter brownie. All bars are covered in 100% chocolate, none of that waxy crap you find on other bars, and they're soft and easy to chew, which is definitely important when you consider that a lot of the protein bars out there are more or less the consistency of chalk that's been ground up and made into a solid and then covered in fake chocolate. That is not the case with Built Bar. On top of it, Built Bars are good for you. They're a great way to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. Really good for the keto diet if you're on that. For example, the coconut almond bar, one of my favorite flavors, tastes just like an Almond Joy, has 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. That's a lot of protein compared to not a lot of calories, not a lot of sugar, and not a lot of carbs, which is very important for you if you're trying to lose weight. Or, for example, a not nut flavor, such as cherry barcia, which, by the way, all non-nut options are prepared in a nut-free facility for those of you with nut allergies. But cherry barcia has 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, and then only 4 grams of sugar and 4 grams of net carbs. So you're really not going to find a protein bar out there that gives you more bang for your buck on a protein versus calories scale. So if you're interested in picking up some Built Bars today, which how could you not be, go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. I do think it's interesting, though. I was telling you before we started recording, I have this sort of like hot take that I think that the Wilpons were easily the worst owners in the New York area, maybe one of the worst ones in sports, period. And I think that they were like demonstrably worse than Dolan. And this is this is one area where I kind of wish that Gavin was on the show, because despite the fact that he's not a Mets fan, I know that he's an extreme anti-Dolan person, like takes the sort of like the national media stance on Dolan, which is like he will never do anything right. And as long as the Knicks are owned by him, they're doomed to be bad forever. Whereas I think like, I mean, you noted this to me before we started recording, and like, it's true. He's been the owner of the Rangers for just as long as he's been owner of the Knicks, because technically they're all part of the same, you know, conglomerate. And like the Rangers have had a good amount of success in the city and under his ownership, because he picked out a good general manager, or I don't know what they call in hockey, president of hockey operations. I don't know.
Could be a basically prime minister. I have no idea.
Yeah. Basically the equivalent of a president of basketball operations in the NBA. And they've had sustained success for a long time. And, you know, the big problem with Dolan with the Knicks is he's just picked the wrong people to run the team. And, you know, he just hasn't lucked out yet and found that one that can do it. But one thing about Dolan is he's never shy about spending money if he thinks that there's winning to be done. He's never shy about, at least lately, putting trust in someone to right the ship. And he only steps in if it's been like 3 years and, you know, in his eyes, there's no demonstrable improvement, you know, to the team. And then, like, I don't know. I think that in general, he wants what's best for the team. And ultimately, whether it's for selfish reasons or not, like, I think a large part of why he wants the Knicks to win is so people will just shut up about him, about how he ruins the team or whatever. But I also think that he legitimately just wants the Knicks to win. Whereas with the Wilpons, I mean, for years, ever since the Madoff thing, where they were involved in Bernie Madoff's famous Ponzi scheme, which lost them a ton of money and more or less turned the Mets into their family business. You know, they for so many years were focused on just making money, and that was it. And if the Mets were basically like not turning a profit, then it was not a good year for the Wilpons. And they were like not willing to spend money to retain players. Like it seemed like to me they would hand out one really big contract every like 5 years or so for someone that they considered to be like the cornerstone. So like first it was David Wright, which ultimately didn't actually work out that great because he got hurt for a large part of his deal. And then now it's DeGrom. Like they finally ponied up and paid DeGrom. But like to your point, they've shipped out a number of really promising players that go on to have good careers elsewhere, such as Zach Wheeler, you know, and guys like that, just because they don't feel like paying them. So they say, okay, well, we'll just ship him off because we don't want to give him his next contract. So, you know, that's enough reason for us to get rid of him. And I don't know. I'm curious your opinion. You know, I know you're not like a Knicks fan, but you're cognizant of the situations of you know, the NBA and other teams around New York. Like, what are your thoughts on the Wilpons versus Dolan debate?
Well, I will say, just to touch on me not being a Knicks fan, I thank my dad every day that he was never into basketball, because instead of saddling me with the Knicks, I got to pick my local team. And I grew up in South Florida, and Shaquille O'Neal came to my town when I was 10 years old. He was my favorite player, and I've been a Heat fan ever since. So that's worked out for me.
Now yeah. I got to cut the show off right here. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Continue.
this has been the most enjoyment I've had watching sports in years, watching this run by the Heat. But the difference between, I think, the Wilpons and Dolan is Jeff Wilpon is really kind of the name that comes to mind first, because here you have the owner's son who has not only made himself a major factor in this team that he technically has no stake in owning, but he has hired himself, appointed himself the president of baseball operations. This is a guy that was drafted by the Montreal Expos as a favor to his father at the time, and basically quit baseball because he got there and found out they only wanted to use him as a bullpen catcher. He has this arrogance about him that he thinks he knows baseball, thinks he is some type of baseball savant. So he'll make a lot of these decisions, and he just gets way too involved. When you look at Dolan, I mean, he's made some bad hires, but who at the time would really think that Phil Jackson was just looking for a paycheck and would really not be doing anything with that job? I mean, no one would have expected Jackson to have, you know, appeared to have not taken much of an interest in really turning the Knicks into a winner and, you know, drafted, you know, Frank Ntilikina. I can't pronounce it. Ntilikina.
Ntilikina. Yeah, we will not speak poorly of Ntilikina on this podcast. But you know, we love him. Yes, Ntilikina is actually great. He's a beyond the numbers kind of player. But
that's okay, but you know, get him in the second round. Don't draft him. Whatever it was. Was it ninth?
He was with the eighth pick that year, and then DSJ went ninth, who actually is on the Knicks now.
Yeah, but Donovan Mitchell was in that draft too, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a whole another podcast, but that's
like, I know.
It wasn't, I don't think there were too many people that were advocating for Donovan Mitchell to be in the Knicks range in that draft. Now, granted, the Knicks also, I guess, to the point that we're about to get to, just hired the guy that drafted Donovan Mitchell in that same draft, or that advocated strongly for the Jazz to draft him. So I guess that's a sign in the positive for the Knicks. But at any rate, we continue with, Phil and all that stuff.
I think bottom line, I mean, neither ownership group is great. I mean, you're arguing which one's worse than the other. But I will say that I think the Wilpons have, you know, operated under, like you said, under the idea of trying to make money at all turns. And here, I'll just leave you with this. There was a player last year, Danny Echevarria, that the Mets, you know, had as an infielder, had a pretty decent year. He was a day away, like a game away from getting a roster bonus that would pay him out $1 million. And so the Mets cut him. He went to the division rival Braves and ended up factoring in to their playoff run. It's little moves like that that were cost cutting that they have made time and again for the past decade.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is too, they, especially under Brody, the current GM, I feel like they've made so many moves too, where they try to sign these like name players that you've heard of maybe 5 years ago that are more or less on their way out of baseball at this point, to fill in the margins and be like, look, we found role players, you know, we found plug and play guys that can, you know, you recognize that name, right? And then, you know, they get on the field and you go, well, yeah, but they suck now. You know, they were good 5 years ago, but you know, there's a reason you were just able to sign them to a non-guaranteed like minor league contract.
That's why a lot of times this year when Rick Porcello gets lit up, you know, I'll tweet out, you know, 2016 AL Cy Young gave up like 7 runs tonight or whatever it is.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because basically even at the time that was considered kind of a weird like decision to make him the Cy Young winner that year. Like people thought that a lot of other pitchers had better cases even that
year. Yeah. I think he just won a lot of games and.
Yeah, that was what it was. I think he was a 20-game winner, if I remember correctly, which probably had a lot more to do with Boston being crazy good that year than him being a great pitcher. But that's a whole other podcast, too. But at any rate, yeah, I mean, I think that's the big difference to me with the two, like you're saying. Like, and on top of the fact that, you know, people do get on Dolan for how he's meddled at times in the past. Like, apparently, for the Carmelo Anthony trade, he was the one who ultimately kind of like forced Donnie Walsh's hand and said, you know, give them whatever they're asking for. Like, I refuse to let this deal not go through or to let the Nets get him or whatever at the time. So he was always criticized for that. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, there was an opportunity where the Knicks could have gotten Kyle Lowry in trade the same season, actually, that they got Andrea Bargnani in trade, where, you know, they got panned by the media rightfully for giving up as much as they did for Bargnani. That apparently made Dolan gun shy that next upcoming December, when they could have dealt with the Raptors again and gotten Kyle Lowry for really not much. It was going to be like Iman Shumpert, Meta World Peace, who wound up getting, or Ron Artest. I don't know if he changed his name back now, but he wound up getting cut just months later. By the Knicks, so he was basically nothing, and it was like a first round pick, I think, for that year, which wound up not being a super high pick anyway, for Kyle Lowry, and that could have potentially solved the Knicks point guard problems for till now. I don't know, I guess we would have seen, but at any rate, you know, it's just kind of those things are more in the past now, I think, with Dolan, and people latch on to those still, whereas you had, you know, Fred Wilpon just actively, you know, sabotaging the Mets, like, as their president of baseball operations, which Dolan, to his credit, has at least never gone full like Mark Cuban and tried to fully insert himself into basketball decisions like that. And especially since Phil Jackson has kind of taken to trusting whoever he hires to do their job until it's proven that they can't do their job and then firing them and getting that over with. But yeah, it's been interesting. But I want to look forward towards Cohen now, because I think Steve Cohen almost feels like James Dolan with a blank check, like James Dolan with no salary cap, but even richer somehow, where I feel like to your point, I don't know that he's necessarily going to just write a blank check to every single free agent out there. But like, if the Mets are in a situation where it's like, hey, we need a starting pitcher or two, he's going to say, okay, well, go get us some starting pitching then, you know, just don't go wild and pay them too much, but I'm willing to pay, you know, a decent starter rate to get somebody here instead of somewhere else, you know, to fill out the staff. Or if it's like, okay, the Mets need a, you know, they're not going to need a first baseman for a long time, you know, but let's say, you know, I don't know, they want to fill second base if they move on from Cano or something, or if they just want a different player and the DH sticks around and they want to keep Cano in the DH, then he'd be okay with spending that money and wouldn't have any issues with going after the best one available and offering the highest contract available. So that's what's got me excited about him. You know, obviously he still needs to, I would assume that Brody is not long for this world and will probably be fired and replaced. But you know, as long as he builds out a good staff that can identify the right players to, you know, make a run at, I think the Mets are in pretty good shape with him as the owner and, you know, the person cutting the checks here.
Yeah, I think one of the things I'm actually most looking forward to is, you know, with the Wilpons, you've always wondered, okay, what happens when that guy reaches free agency? So the, you know, coming example is Michael Conforto, who has turned into a really good player this year. He'll probably get MVP votes, honestly. And he is a year away from free agency. Now you don't worry if the Mets are going to write him a check and keep him there long term. I was saying that if the Wilpons stayed as owners, or even if someone who didn't have as much money like A-Rod came in, there might have been a chance that Jacob DeGrom, when that contract got a little more expensive in a couple of years, could be traded down the line. Now with Steve Cohen, that's not going to happen. And I think they can spend on areas of need. Like, they really need a catcher. JT Realmuto will probably be, he's definitely the top free agent catcher, and he might be the top free agent overall. If you had to ask me right now, if JT Realmuto is in a Mets uniform next year, I honestly believe he will be. So that's all really exciting if you're a Mets fan. And I also think, just looking at the entire landscape of New York sports right now, the Jets are terrible. The Giants don't know what they're doing, and I'm a Giants fan. You know, the Nets are the one team in basketball now you can kind of trust might be good because of their star players. My main point is there is an opening for the Mets to be the big team in town right now. I know the Yankees are good, but I think with Steve Cohen coming in, there's going to be a different vibe around the Mets in 2021, and they have a real chance to be the talk of the town, as they say.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to lie. I think that there is a chance that – and it, I don't know if it would almost, in a weird way, sort of bother me, but it would also be kind of fun that I think the Mets, because of the spending potential of Cohen, you know, even if he doesn't go completely wild, but if he starts, you know, getting like maybe being in play for like one major free agent a year, which is more than you could say for a lot of teams, I think that there's potential like new evil empire vibes about mm-hmm. the Mets, which could be kind of fun as a Mets fan, to be completely honest, to actually be the team in power that everybody sort of hates and gets on for once. Instead of just being the lovable losers, it could be a fun little change of pace there to be the big money team, you know, spending all the money in New York and hopefully having a good time and winning some baseball games.
Well, I will say, I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with Trevor Bauer, but he's kind of like the most hated or most polarizing player in baseball right now, just because he kind of speaks his mind and is really vocal on his social media and everything else. And he's going to be a free agent. I saw someone today talking about him signing with the Mets, and it was like, would you rather be hated and have a guy like this, or continue to be the laughable losers there? where everyone's making fun of all of the mistakes you make and the PR disaster. So I think if you're a Mets fan, to be hated right now is something that you might enjoy, to have that different experience.
Yeah, it certainly would be different. I mean, because with the Mets, I feel like it's a different vibe than with the Knicks. I feel like the Knicks are losers, but in the eyes of many, they're hateable losers. Whereas the Mets, I feel like the Mets and their fans are generally viewed as lovable losers, where it's just like, oh, the poor Mets, you know, yeah. Things went bad for them again. Whereas with the Knicks, it's like everybody looks at the Knicks when they do bad and they're like, ah, screw the Knicks. Like, we hate them. You know, we're glad when they're doing bad. Whereas with
I think part of that with the Knicks is, even if the Nets were to, you know, live up to their potential and like make a finals next year, there's still a lot of people that would view the Knicks as like the number one team in New York still. It's just, I think that's part of it.
Yeah, it's a popularity thing for sure. Like, I guess the Mets getting good and becoming a potential, like the dichotomy between the Mets and the Yankees is more akin to like the Nets, like the Mets are the Nets in this analogy versus the Knicks.
Yeah.
Compared to the Yankees, you know what I mean? But like, yeah, I would say the Mets have probably a more established fan base in New York just by virtue of being around for longer and sort of developing a really good following on their own. But yeah, it's interesting to look at and think about. At any rate, yeah, I think we've gone pretty in depth on this. This went longer than I thought it was going to go, but I think we could probably call it a wrap on this overall discussion. Did you have anything else to add, like any maybe hot take predictions on the Cohen era coming up for the Mets, and then maybe any predictions for the Knicks that you have as a dreaded Heat fan that we're all begrudgingly being forced to root for right now against the Celtics?
So I'll say it's not that big of a hot take, but after not making the playoffs this year, which is basically, you know, in stone at this point, the Mets, it'll be only 2 years in their last 14 that they have made the playoffs. With Steve Cohen, that number is going to be a lot greater over the next 14 years. I think they'll probably make the playoffs over half the time. I really think that it's going to be a big change. As far as the Knicks, I don't know if I have any hot takes there. I don't know what they could do. I don't know what free agents they're targeting or what their deal is, but maybe RJ Barrett becomes really good.
Yeah, we're gonna just you know, hope that is the case and go from there. All right, do you have anything that you wanted to promote, Ryan? Like anything that you're working on? Obviously, Locked On Mets. If anybody that's listening to this is a Mets fan, I think you put on a pretty good case today for why they should listen. But is there anything else you wanted to promote?
Yeah, just follow Locked On Mets wherever you get your podcasts. It's going to be a really fun off season as we kind of see this transition unfold. And if you want to get some Mets takes, you can follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan.
All right. Thanks so much, Ryan, and appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.